Hello and welcome back to Farm Talk. I'm Farm Director Shauna Olson coming to you from the North Dakota Corn Council studio. We're going to finish up our conversation with Doug Lear. What a fun Friday it is getting a chance to catch up with him and continue our conversation about spring fishing.
Traditionally, this time of year is really a good opportunity for people to go out and do some walleye fishing. It's never going to be confused with the popularity of deer season, but the springtime of the year for fishing can be some of the best times that anglers have, Shauna.
No doubt. I see my husband he just like a little kid in a candy store every spring. And I know every weekend he's like, what do we have going on this weekend? And I just look at him, why?
Yeah.
And I know it's fishing,
And you're right. And it's from northern pike and walleye. And I think part of it, like you kind of alluded to, is we get cooped up all winter long. And when the fish, when the rivers and the creeks and the lakes start to open up, that spring fever kind of hits us. And we're just, the other side of it is, you look at where we've come in the last, 20 years is we're more mobile than ever before. And it's, with gas prices remaining relatively, affordable, it's nothing for people to say, hey, let's head up to Devil's Lake for the weekend. Let's head out to Bismarck. Let's head down to Pier. Let's head to the Missouri River and get out there and do some fishing. And we really want to encourage people to use those opportunities. We've got a great resource and great recreational opportunity. And there's no reason to stay home at all, Shauna.
No, there really isn't. One thing on that video you sent me talking about Sacagawea, one thing that caught my attention was some of these walleyes are going deeper. They're going down to 30 feet and lower. Why are they doing that, Doug? And obviously you can fish that deep too.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, when you get into the spawning time of year, you see the traditional migrations of fish. They'll head to some of the deeper bays and to the back bays, the old long in the tooth angler tell you that 90% of the fish occupy 10% of the water, which basically means is you can go find the fish. You can have a big, huge body of water like Devil's Lake, a big, huge river system like the Missouri or Lake Oahe or Lake Sacagawea. And, there's a reason why you see all the boats in one spot. There's a reason why you see all the anglers, because that's where the fish are at. And when we look at the way electronics have advanced over the course of years and people now documenting their fishing, it's like they used to kind of have to be like Lewis and Clark and just kind of spread out and try to find what you could find. And now with the electronics that they have and the documentation that people are using, they know the exact spot where they can take like a lake level in 2019 and maybe match it up to what the lake level was in 2016 with similar runoff. And with the GPS, they can go fish the exact spot that they were catching walleyes 3 years ago. And it's kind of fascinating and amazing to see the evolution of what fishing has become, Shauna.
These underwater cameras surprise me, too. That blows my mind.
Well, but here's the flip side to it, is we can find them. We can see them, but we still haven't found out anything just to guarantee that you're going to make those fish bite, Shauna. It's still fishing. It's not catching, which is why, just because your husband comes home without fish doesn't mean that he decided to go to the casino and not go fishing.
Well, okay, good to know. That is good to know.
It's still fishing. It's not catching. It's still fishing, Shauna.
He went up to Devil's Lake this winter on an ice fishing trip, and they got skunked, like came home with nothing, and it's just like, oh, that stinks. But he said they still had a blast,
Yep, and that's kind of what we try to tell people is, it's where we live, the worst day fishing, the worst day of getting skunked is still better than the best day at the office, so to speak, and which is, again, the reality of why, when you live in North Dakota, Minnesota, and South Dakota, and you see people that are willing to travel thousands of miles and take airplane trips and ride the train and come out here, we are literally the Walt Disney World when it comes to the outdoors. We're a destination, and you know, sometimes you know, folks like you and I that have grown up here and lived here all our life, you know, need to put our feet in the ground and just go, hey, you know, this is something that people, you know, cherish and are willing to save up their vacation time and to save up extra spending money so that they can come and enjoy what we have in our backyard. And we want to make sure that people don't take that for granted and make sure people realize just how special of a place it is that we live, Shauna.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, since I have you on the line, I wanted to talk to you about that mountain lion somebody caught, killed, near Fort Ransom.
Yeah.
You know, that's fascinating to me, too. I would love to see a mountain lion when I'm in my vehicle or in my house. I'd love to see one. What are the odds I could ever see one? And, I mean, there aren't that many around, but yet they are around, right?
And the reality is from Sheldon to Enderlin to Sargent County, we've had mountain lions taken near Hillsboro. And, I mean, the mountain lion is an enigma. And, you know, when we look at some of the research that's been documented and how they can travel literally hundreds, if not thousands of miles from the upper Midwest to the East Coast, they're a fascinating creature. And, you know, I've never seen one in the wild, but just because you live in the Red River Valley doesn't mean you won't see one or they're not here. And just because you may live in more wild country of the Badlands, there's people that lived in the Badlands and they haven't seen them. That's you know, kind of the draw of the lore of what mountain lions are, because quite frankly, they really don't want to be seen. There was a fascinating research project done in Los Angeles, and they wrote a feature in National Geographic about 3 or 4 years ago, and the number of mountain lions living in the urban areas of Los Angeles, and what jumped out at me and sticks with me is with GPS tracking, they were able to track mountain lions that could cross 6 lanes of Los Angeles interstate in the dark of night and not get hit by vehicles. I mean, they are just a fascinating creature that way. And again, the reality is they can cause damage to people's livestock, to horses. They are a predator. As much as we're fascinated by them, is that we also need to respect them as well.
No kidding. My neighbor thought she saw one between our yards a couple of years ago. It was dark. She said all she saw was eyes. She said, I don't believe it was a coyote. I mean, I don't know, but you know, it would be rare to see one or to have one nearby.
Yeah, and that's a good word to use, is rare or uncommon. But again, you know, we've had them legally taken in the Red River Valley, and we've had them spotted on a pretty, you know, regular, I guess I wouldn't say regular basis, but it's not uncommon to have them spotted, not uncommon to have them taken just about anywhere in the upper Midwest now.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like you said, they really do travel. And yeah, I suppose they're not a real problem for our ranchers, but they can be a problem when they do show up.
And that's, you really put that into a nice little box there. Is like there, you know, in the totality of issues that farmers and ranchers face, they're not significant. But if you have them around, they definitely can be. They eat bighorn sheep in the Badlands. They eat mule deer. They're an apex top end predator. I was in a seminar on mountain lions a number of years back, and that was one of the things that really quote unquote jumped out at me is as a primary apex predator, when mountain lions are hungry, they basically eat. So the next thing that comes along and they're hungry, they're going to eat it, whether it's a bighorn sheep, whether it's a mule deer, or you know, a mountain biker in the Badlands. That's the nature of a beast of a mountain lion.
Oh, that is crazy. Well, good to know. Funny story before I let you go. My sister came over the other day. She lives out near Kindred as well. And she said, you know, I saw this funny thing out in my neighbor's yard this morning. And I don't want to say too much, but man, it looked like a mountain lion. And we said, well, you should go check it out. Go look for prints or something. This is so fascinating. Long story short, the neighbor's dog had diarrhea.
And you know what, to give people, to arm themselves with a little information, because we do get a lot of reports of mountain lions and we never say never. One big key One big key, especially this time of year when you've got some softer ground, some moist ground, some mud out there, is mountain lions are cats. And typically when cats are walking, they will not have their claws extended out. They will have them retracted and in. A canine species, a coyote, a wolf, a dog, you would see those nail prints in it. So when people say, wow, I saw this huge print, I think it might be a mountain lion, and I'll ask, well, could you see claw prints? And they'll say yes. I'll say, well, that's a pretty strong indicator that it is not a mountain lion, that it is not a cat species when you can see those claws, because they're going to have them retracted when they're walking in most situations, Shauna.
This is Farm Talk. Have a good weekend.